Welcome to Matters of Experience. My name is Abigail Honor.
And I'm Brenda Cowan.
This podcast is produced by Lauren Ipsum here in New York City and explores the creativity, innovation, and psychology driving designed experiences and encounters. Hello to anybody listening for the first time, and welcome back to our regular listeners. Today, our guest is Ali Shell, who, after wearing many hats in the world of museums early on in her career, now works as the Director of Public Programs at the Marshall Steam Museum in Yorkland, Delaware, where she champions small museums, which is one of the subjects of today's podcast. She has been around museums almost her entire life, thanks to her father, who took her to cultural sites on her summers off. Ali, a big welcome to the show.
Welcome, Ali.
Thank you so much. I am a big fan of your podcast and just appreciate all that you do for the museum community. So thank you for having me.
Well, we're so excited to have you, and let's just get kickstarted by having you tell us a little bit about your early exposure to museums and historic sites. And what is it about your upbringing that influenced the path that your professional life has taken?
So, big thanks to my father, who is a now retired history teacher. He taught eighth grade history, which is its own special kind of challenge. He loved teaching middle school students. And I think one of my first museum memories is at 4 years old, going to Colonial Williamsburg with him. But on his summers off, that's what we would do. We would go and visit different cultural sites all on the East Coast. And I just was so influenced by him. So I then decided when I turned 16, got my driver's license, the thing that I decided to do on my weekends was, you know, not drive to the mall or other places, was to go volunteer at my local museums. And this first museum that I volunteered at, I remember approaching sort of the supervisor there and trying to think of ways to draw more people into the museum. And this was at 17 years old. And the museum was located kind of in this town where there was a central hub, almost like a wagon wheel. And the central hub is where everybody kind of gathered. They had farmers markets on the weekends and different things going on. And I remember on the weekends, I would drive past and see all these people kind of gather in the middle, but then they wouldn't trickle down into where our museum was, just a block or two off of this central spot. And I approached her and I was like, we should go up and, you know, I'm already in costume. I'm happy to hand out pamphlets and brochures and talk people up. They even put a sign out. I was like brainstorming all these different things, and very genuinely, they were like, yeah, go and do that. That sounds like a great idea.
So you're a natural.
Even then, I was already thinking about how to propel museums, small museums forward.
Where do you think people like you get that drive to go the extra mile? And is it only in this area of your life, or was it in other subjects at school? Like, do you think it's just central to who you are, or is it specifically about this subject matter?
I think it just goes back to, for me, being really drawn to museums and their missions and what they're about, and just trying to help them to survive. It's almost like a small museum philosophy of just letting people know that these places exist. They're here in the community and you should come and check us out. And I think it also goes back to my father in terms of just like teaching style and being sort of engaging or sort of interpretation. You know, he taught history, so he could have just done the usual thing. We just kind of go through the book, but he would go the extra mile. And on these summers off, he would go and use his own money. It's very common for teachers, and purchase extra things. And he would do these like week long sort of interactive experiences based around Civil War history and then also the American Revolution. And he made so many kids become teachers because of that, because he had this sort of interactive style of teaching. And that has just stuck with me. And that is kind of my approach because I do public programs in education. So I know I'm giving my dad a big shout out, but he so deserves it because he just really influenced me. And that's sometimes what it takes, is just like one person to kind of be sort of your vision and kind of sets you on your path.
Well, I'll tell you something. What I think is going to be revealed pretty quickly in this is that you yourself have quite a vision. Let's talk about your first job, which was a director position. Who starts out as a director? That's incredible.
I know, right?
A very small museum, but they took a chance on you, which is really admirable. What was that first role like for you? How did you make your mark?
I want the terrifying.
Abby wants to know if you were terrified.
I don't think I was terrified. I think I was terrified at my first board meeting. I don't think I was daunted by the actual act of taking on a small museum. I think I was just very excited. and also very humbled that they just appreciated sort of youthful or emerging professional ideas and energy. And I know you're going to make me emotional just because I always just consider myself this kind of small fish in a really big pond and just kind of make my mark behind the scenes. And that's kind of what I like to do. Now, the interesting thing about landing this position was I don't think you could really do this anymore, but I was so desperate, I guess, to get a position out of graduate school that I looked up a list of museums and all the places that I was willing to move to and just went down the list and emailed them and was sharing my resume, looking on their websites. And this was the place that I ended up at, was one of the places. And they got back to me right away. And they were like, actually, we're looking for a director, you know, send over your resume and cover letter, and we'd love to consider you. And I remember thinking, there's no way. I'm an emerging professional. There is no way they're going to hire me. So I actually ignored the email.
Oh, no, Allie.
No. Oh, no.
Like a couple days later, and they were like, hey, we still haven't gotten your cover letter and resume. You know, we'd still love to consider you. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll send it in. Immediately get back to me, set up an interview, and rest is history. Yeah, they chose me.
That's awesome.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
And which museum was this, Allie?
It's called the Milton Historical Society. It was in an old church. So it was this quirky little small museum located right downtown in Milton, Delaware, which is maybe about 30 minutes north of a lot of the Delaware beaches.
I want to hear about the t-shirt story, please, because I find that absolutely fascinating and sort of that overall latitude you had in your role.
So the Milton Historical Society, not only was it sort of the local history of the town, but Milton was also part of the shipbuilding industry in the southern part of the state. And I don't know, I just have all these different parts of me. I also have a very creative side. And it sort of manifested itself in me wanting to make a t-shirt for the gift shop. And I also love a good pun. So because the town also has that quirky side to it, I was like, well, let me see if I can get away with this. And so the shirt said, "Oh, ship," on the front, and then I had a little tagline about, you know, shipbuilding happened in, you know, Milton, Delaware. I can't remember exactly what the back said. And I was like, ooh, this is right on the line.
Did they sell?
Mm-hmm.
I knew it.
Oh my goodness. And even years later, people remember this shirt. They asked me about it. So yeah, I think I made my mark in some way, even if it was just this terrible pun t-shirt.
But I think that's one of the fun advantages of working in a small museum and running it. Like, mm-hmm. you really do wear multiple hats. You really can work in, you know, the grassroots marketing or in the merchandising and be aware of, like, who is your visitor? How is it cyclical? How is it seasonal? And you can really affect change.
But what were some of the challenges, Allie?
Oh, boy.
Some.
Well, I think always with small museums, right? I think just coming in, being the only full-time staff, I had two part-time staff workers. So it was just like everything, I was on all the time. When you're in a small museum, you can see directly the influence you have, whether it's through an O-Ship t-shirt or a neat exhibit you're doing, or just working with the community and talking to them when they come and visit the museum. So you get really addicted to seeing the influence that you have in a positive way. And that means that you end up taking on more and more and more. And I think I just got to a point after 2 years that I realized, well, A, I was burnt out. And that, you know, being a director was very interesting and a really great learning experience. But I realized there were areas I liked and areas that I didn't like. So to transition out of that is an interesting thing because people are like, well, you hit the top, you know, where do you go from there? And a lot of people say, oh, you're kind of downgrading. But for me, because I don't have an ego about those kinds of things, it was just more important that I set up my career pathway and my story. And I realized that out of this, the things I really liked were programming and education. You know, that we really don't like the administrative side and also some of the other challenges, such as like with HR. When you're in a small museum, a lot of times you don't have an HR department. And when something actually happens, I won't get into the details, but when something actually happens to you and pretty much the only HR department that you have potentially at a small museum is your board, that gets really tough. And so there were a couple of situations I had to navigate where I was like, I can't really rely on my board just because of the nature of the thing. So how do you do it? And one of them, I had to actually involve a stakeholder in the community because I had to think really creatively as like, how do I bring someone else in with influence that can help with this situation? But I can't rely on anybody in the organization. to kind of help figure this out.
You certainly were very nimble, though, in terms of how you, I mean, the idea of bringing in an outside stakeholder and figuring out how to do that in a way that was safe. I'm just really personally very inspired by your thinking and how you were able to pivot and sort of, yeah, you know, address just how to address things like this where there's no like answer.
And I think that's good advice for anybody in a situation, mm-hmm, right? When there's a one against many and you feel either you're not getting heard or your point across or something's unfair, bringing in, you know, a third party, a mediator, somebody who can offer a fresh perspective often helps to solve the issue in some way, shape or form. But it seems to me that wherever you go, whatever organization you join, you really are trying to elevate them and make them successful. And so you've brought to the community a number of different things. Can you talk about some of your programs?
Well, yeah, partnerships, I think, are one of my favorite things. You're centered somewhere in a community. And I don't ever feel like I'm in competition with another organization. I feel like we're both kind of fighting the same fight. And I guess one of the best examples of that was I was working at another small museum that had historic houses. And one historic house was kind of located a little further away from kind of the main campus of where things were. And I really wanted to highlight that building. It was very cool. It was an 18th century tavern. And I always go to different museum programs and kind of get inspired. So I will give a shout out to the Franklin Institute's Science After Hours. I had gone and the whole museum was open and people could kind of explore around, and they had different themes each night that you went, and there were different stations, and it was really interactive and fun. And I was like, well, what if I superimpose that kind of idea onto this historic tavern? And one of the big features that I kind of picked up on and that people were always drawn to was just exploring the house. Let them at their own pace explore the house. And then each room has something interactive. So whether it's someone from the community doing a presentation, or they're writing with a, you know, a quill pen, for example, or they're making 18th century insults with different words. And I would just come up with some of these activities. It really activated the space and made it come alive. And this event would be like sold out. I think I did this for about 2.5 years. But then the other side to it was the volunteer side. And so we ended up getting this core group of volunteers that loved to help out. And I would also give them some ownership. So I'd send them kind of, here's your area that you're going to help with. And here's some information on it. But, you know, you're your own person, like, take it and go with it. And so they loved that so much that I just had this core group that would come volunteer every month. And it was just, that was probably one of my favorite things I ever kind of created.
Okay. So recently you shot into everyone's LinkedIn channel when you posted your open letter to the American Alliance of Museums and their treatment of small museums. So a little background to your story for our listeners. You attended the conference this year after about a 10-year hiatus, because back then you were told a small museum meant a staff of 30 or more, which certainly wasn't you. So now you're back, hopeful, optimistic, proud to represent real small museums in a panel presentation on small museums, perfect for you, and the room's overcrowded, so they have to set up extra seats and like super, super well attended. And the topic is important to this massive group of people because I think it's about 85% of people in our profession work at small museums. And now, Ali, tell us what happened.
So I had 10 years ago attended AAM as an emerging professional. I knew I had landed that director position. And then, yes, they had the person at the panel had mentioned their staff size of had to at least been like 20 or 30 individuals. I was like, that is not a small museum. And so there I was just kind of like, oh, I was a little defeated in some ways because AAM, and I don't want this to, I'm just going to preface this, I don't want this to be a bashing of AAM at all. And so, you know, you will see that through my letter, it's a call for just being proactive in general. But, you know, you kind of look to them as the thought leaders and sort of the overall kind of support system for museums in the US. And so just to have that experience was just like really disappointing. And then going back 10 years later, getting on this panel, for me, it was like correcting an error in the past of, now I actually get to do that session that I was really hoping for 10 years ago. But then I was just noticing, and even just talking with colleagues. So the letter is kind of also a representation of some other just conversations. And I was like, I'm happy to be the kind of, I'll have the target on my back of conversations I had with other employees. And there's just some things that really turned us off, and to see that things just really hadn't changed in some ways, or maybe they reverted back in some ways. And so just really wanted to call AAM and others out as to, you know, hey, we got to fix this and fix some other things, or, you know, how can we all come together? We're creative fields. So we're all connected to different resources. So if it isn't AAM, who else can do it?
It is important to note that AAM is really the big player, certainly in the United States, you know, and we can talk about ICOM, you know, of course, as well, and on an international level by mission. But AAM is not insignificant. How is it that AAM is a mismatch currently for small museums?
So first and foremost, just small museum representation. So if you've never worked at a small museum, you don't really understand the challenges and also the really great things that a small museum can bring. And so, you know, just noticing that just about all of leadership, and probably for a long time, I haven't gone back and really done a full deep dive of that, have been, you know, people that come from larger museum backgrounds or even sort of, you know, higher executive positions. So that was just kind of disappointing that there isn't sort of a spread within the leadership there, executive leadership. And then articles as well. I know that there was someone at one point that was kind of really championing on their staff quite a few years ago, small museums. So they had helped create the small museum accreditation pathway, because there are just some things like accreditation that really weren't accessible to small museums in certain grants. Even though they'll say it's for anybody, there are just things set up that already are limiting. So some grants, some larger grants, looking for like, oh, what staff member is going to do this and this and this. And I had even me, because I was ambitious when I was a director, and I was like, I'm going to apply for an NEH grant before they had created the small museum grant. And just even filling it out, I was like, I don't think I have a chance. I want to do it. I want to go for it. But, you know, they were like, well, what staff member is getting assigned to this role and this role? I'm like, it's just me. And then, yeah, they would have, so this person that was sort of championing small museums also, I think, was kind of instrumental. This is just my take in getting a lot of these small museum articles, because they always have the articles that they post out, which is really great resources in general. But sometimes, a lot of times, I read through them and I'm like, okay, that's a great case study, but doesn't really apply to my site. And that's always what I'm looking for as a small museum person, is how can I take this information and how can I like directly apply that to my site? And so, not to simplify things, but I know that we're like, we just got to get things done. So help us make that happen.
What were some of those solutions then? Because I know, you know, in the open letter, you lay out some of the solutions to benefit the museum community that you offered up to AAM.
Yes. So I didn't want to write a letter that was just, you know, being angry and upset. And I just want to preface that I did get to meet with some representatives recently at AAM. So they have started the conversation. But basically, some things that I put up, of course, very simply, just like create space for small museums to be in leadership positions. And I think also there are some parts of AAM that have like paywalls or higher admission rates to attend certain things. And like even the annual conference is just can be like inaccessible just in terms of cost, even for like emerging professionals. And of course, there's some ways you can always kind of get around that if you become a volunteer or get a scholarship. Not to say that they don't give pathways to affordability, but still, just as a base level, it's pretty expensive. And I get it. It's a larger conference. So places like Small Museum Association have like a way more affordable conference for me that I just have gone to every year, and I get what I need out of it. But, you know, thinking just maybe they can think more creatively about some ways that things are structured. Even for posting jobs, they have a job board, and there is a fee associated with that. And so I do career coaching stuff as well for museum professionals. And for me, when I see something like that, it just means that only certain jobs are going to get posted, because they're not going to post, let's say, an entry-level position or an internship necessarily. I think they did make a change from this on internships being posted on there. But, you know, you're not going to spend $250 to post a smaller, lower-level position versus, you know, they're going to put that money into executive directors, for example. So just some equity in there in terms of like opening it up so that, you know, there isn't really one space for museum people to find a job, period. There isn't one resource out there. So that really needs to change. Even just advocacy in general for funding, I think, in terms of grants and like, I just am thinking of things that are going to like just help move the needle for museums in general. Is there was a time during the pandemic where grants actually we're funding operational costs and staff members and things like that versus the project aspect. And I thought, oh, this is really great seeing a lot of these grant makers kind of shift that during the pandemic, and then they shifted right back. So I'm like, AAM already does these advocacy days. Who can kind of help talk to these grant makers and be like, this is actually what we need? And that would solve so many problems for museums if we could just have some funding for the people that work at these organizations who then can do these projects.
So let's do that shout out to people in the grant business.
Hear, hear.
Please, 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 please make a grant that helps support small museum staff and their operations.
Museum staff in general, for any museum, you know?
Absolutely.
I think some of these things benefit museums of all sizes.
I had a conversation a couple of years ago with a very notable person in the museum world. And we were talking about the idea of small museums. And this individual very fervently said that it's a frustration of theirs that funding would ever go to a small museum, and that it's the big museums that can be the change makers. And I disagreed at the time and continue to disagree with that notion, and instead feel that the real change makers are going to be these smaller, nimble, we'll go back to ships. It's the tiny ship and not the cruise ship that's able to more nimbly pivot and be responsive to the times and be responsive to individuals and individual causes even. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, an example I can give, going back to ships, right? So even just during the pandemic, I had an idea day one when everything got shut down to do sort of an online program. And my boss was like, yeah, go for it, do it. So I was able to get that program up and running in a day. So just being able to pivot on a dime like that when you have the smaller sloops versus the larger ships really makes a difference. And, you know, being able to just see what you need to do for the community or what you need to do in general. I think being community resources is super important. So you're seeing a lot more museums become voter registration sites, just even community gathering spots for lots of just different events that may or may not relate to the museum, but it's a place that's, you know, where people just go to gather. Supporting the people in your community, not just the visitors, but the people that are working and volunteering there, and supporting them as much as you're supporting the visitor, and recognizing that the people that are probably working and volunteering there might have some ideas too into the community that you're serving.
Well, being that AAM stopped its work with small professional groups as a part of its organizational structure, in response to that, the Society for Experiential Graphic Design, SEGD, they have just started a brand new professional practices group that I must say has received a rousing amount of interest from the community. They have created their own professional practice group specific to museums. They anticipate creating several, I believe, of these professional practices groups, but they have started with museums. And Allie, I don't know if you are on board, but please do take a peek and get the small museum representation in the mix there. And I am very willing to believe that they would be very receptive to your voice and the voices of small museums being a part of that practice group.
Yeah, excellent. I think that's just what needs to happen. And knowing that there is space for these smaller museums to have a voice is really helpful. And that's kind of also what, in my conversation with AAM, that they're like, you know, hey, we already did some outreach to some of these different committees and things that we have here. And they're aware and are open to, you know, people applying. So I think it's part of it is knowing that there is a space.
Yeah. Well, they have new leadership and this is exactly what they need to hear. And obviously they're working with you, which I think is a great result. They're listening, which is so important. So, you know, forging forward and making change is so important. So thank you, Allie, so much for joining us today and shining light on small museums and their importance to local communities that they serve, and for honestly and candidly discussing the challenges of working in a small museum that staff face as you strive to thrive.
I try. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but
keep going, Ali. Keep going. Take a deep breath.
Absolutely. You have a great job. A lot of people who are grateful for you, and certainly including Abby and myself.
100%.
Oh my gosh, I'm so humbled. Thank you so much.
And thanks to everyone who tuned in today. If you like what you heard, subscribe to more episodes of Matters of Experience, more episodes of Abby and Brenda. And wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure to leave a rating and a review and share with a friend. We'll see you next time.
Take good care of yourselves, everyone.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp. and recorded at Hanger Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.